Welcome to another edition of Five of the Best. This one is about 1997. In 1995, we saw the romantic blockbuster film of Titanic. This was the main force, driving force behind this was James Cameron, who was fascinated with shipwrecks. And it was when the Titanic was found in 1995-6, that James Cameron got to work on a script. And it was when he approached the studios at first were very sceptical when they heard that he was going to make a 3-hour film with no car chase, no explosions. This is a time when things like the films at the time were being made were such as True Lies, Air Force One, and Terminator 2. So he actually did get funding, but he got funding from two companies, Paramount and 20th Century Fox. And once that was done, he actually started to look for the main characters, and he started to look around and started looking around for some lead characters, and Tom Cruise was primarily interested, but his pay demands were too much and he was too old, and James wanted Jared Leto to audition for it, but he refused. And eventually, then Leonardo DiCaprio, he asked Leonardo, who firstly refused, but James persisted, and Leonardo eventually did take the role. But it did. He wanted to play did a very different role. He wanted to play it with a stamina and a limp. Then Cameron started to look for a character to play Rose, and she had problems there because Claire Danes refused to play the part, Gwyneth Paltrow refused to do the part, and it was really through the grapevine that an English actress heard that the part was going, and she really campaigned for the part. She sent Cameron daily notes saying that I'm your Rose, you've got to see me, and she emailed every day, and eventually she got a screen test with Leonardo DiCaprio, and she was very impressed with him, saying if you don't pick me, pick him because he's very good. And after that, she sent him roses every day. And eventually Cameron cracked, and that's how she got the part. James Cameron started to build sets for the film, and he went to Baja California in Mexico. He purchased a 48-acre site, and he actually started construction of a full-scale model of a Titanic, except for the bow of the boat. And the whole ship was going to be fitted into a tank to do some of the scenes. And the replica boat was 220 metres long, and some of the decking was used as a set, so all the decking was used as sets. Some of the cabins were built, and the first class staircase, where a lot of the action happens, and where the couple ploughed through the water trying to get out, that was destroyed while shooting. In fact, the whole boat was, after shots, was just broken up and sold as scrap. The shooting went on for, it was scheduled to be 130 days, but it actually went on for 160 days. And this all added to the cost. The cost was already a very, very expensive film, and it ended up costing £200 million, which was the most expensive film of all time at the time. The release was going to be due in the summer, but this was set back. This was just fueling rumours that it was going to be an absolute stinker. But of course, it wasn't. And it's actually previewed on December the 15th, 97, and the film grossed over $2 billion, so it was a huge success. In 1997, one of the bands that had a successful year was The Verve. And one of my favourite songs, Bittersweet Sympathy, which we'll get back to. The Verve was formed in 1990 when Richard Ashcroft, Nick McNabb and Simon Jones met at Winstanley Sixth Form College, and they had their first gig, in fact at a friend's birthday party. Success came quite quickly for them, and they signed a record deal in 1991, and they recorded a couple of singles with a couple of hits. She's a Superstar and Gravity's Grave, which was both, well, Superstar was quite a big hit. By 1995, they released their second album, Northern Soul, and this produced three hits, and the album itself stayed in charts for 13 weeks, peaking at 23. In 1997 came their third album, and Urban Hymns, and this was a monster hit, reached number one, staying in the charts for nearly 3 years, and with songs such as Drugs Don't Work, Bittersweet Symphony, and Lucky Man. Bittersweet Symphony reached number two in the charts. When Richard Ashcroft was writing Bittersweet Symphony, he actually wrote and was given permission to sample a Rolling Stones song, and initially the royalties was to be split 50-50, but the Rolling Stones, and especially Jagger and especially Richards, took him to court, claiming that this is a Rolling Stones song and not, he should not receive anything. And the court agreed, saying that all royalty rights would go to Jagger and Richards. When Keith Richards was asked whether he felt guilty about robbing the Verve of its song, he said that if the Verve should write a better song than the one we wrote, they should do it. But since then, there has been some leniency with Richards, with Ashcroft thought to be getting around 10% of the royalties. This is the Rolling Stones, the version the last time performed by the Andrew Oldham Orchestra. I'll let you decide whose song it is. In 1997, the world was introduced to Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling. This is J.K. Rowling's story. J.K. Rowling was born in 1965 in Yate, Gloucestershire. She had a very normal upbringing, and by her late teens, she applied for to go to university to do classics, but she was turned down, and instead she went to Exeter University. She studied classics there. Having left the university, she had a few jobs before working for Amnesty International, and it was while being transferred from London to Manchester and just being stuck on a train for 4 hours that the idea of Harry Potter came into her head. And she claimed that once the idea of the wizardry Harry Potter came, all the other characters just clicked into place. And this was in 1990 she had the idea of Harry Potter originally. This was put in the back burner because she moved, left Amnesty and moved to Portugal to teach English. And it was while in Portugal she met her future husband, who was called Antes, Jordi Antes, a TV journalist. And she married him, had a kid, and divorced him almost as quick as that. Married in 91, divorced in 92. And she moved back into Scotland, living with her sister, with a small child, no job, no prospects, no claiming benefits, and grappling for the idea of what to do next. She had one idea, and that was of Harry Potter. In 1995, she started a course so that she could teach legitimately in the UK, and it was during this coursework that she actually knuckled down. And she'd already had 3 chapters, which she'd already sent to a publisher who was mildly interested. But it was during this time that she actually knuckled down and actually finished the Harry Potter book and sent the complete copy to the publisher. In 1996, she got an £8,000 grant from the Scottish Art Council because they did not think that she could make a living out of writing children's books. And this was before Harry Potter was actually being published. Harry Potter, the publishers had differing and dallying, and eventually they decided to go to publish the book And eventually the first run of Harry Potter was 1,000 books, of which 500 would be said to be sent to libraries and the rest sold at bookstores. One of these books now is valued between £15,000 and £25,000. Within 3 months, the book had been nominated for the Smarties Booker Prize, and it actually won that. And then it was nominated and won the Best Children's Book of the Year, and that was to be published. Next, it went to auction for publication in America, and in the auction, the Harry Potter book was sold for £103,000. And upon hearing this, J.K. Rowling thought she won the lottery. She said she was on a high for about 3 days, but this was just the start of the Harry Potter phenomenon. And up to now, the first book has sold anything up to 300,000 copies. I'm going to talk a little about the sporting events of 1997, and the first thing I'm going to talk about is the US Masters. This is the first year that Tiger Woods entered as a professional player, and he ended up winning the tournament by a record 12 shots. He was the youngest major winner ever, and he is also the quickest to rise to the number one position, having turned professional just 42 weeks before. In May, in the French Open, the final, this shows how much tennis has changed over a short period, because a 16-year-old and a 19-year-old were playing in the French Open final. And nowadays, there's only one 18-year-old in the top 40. But this is when Eva Majoli beat Martina Hingis in a two-set final, ending Hingis's 37 match beating series. Recent record, and also preventing her from winning all the Grand Slams that year, because she went on to win, or she had already won the Australian, and she went on to win Wimbledon and the American. In June, we saw the second fight between Holyfield and Tyson for the world's title. This is when Tyson had already been beaten twice, and very much looking to gain some glory, and Holyfield was taking on the fight purely for money. And the fight would be known as the Bite Fight. In the fight itself, Holyfield was on top, and in the third round, Tyson just decided to take a bite out, or bits, Holyfield's ear. He was taken aside and disqualified, but Holyfield said he was all right to continue, and so the fight continued. And in the eighth round, Tyson then bits his other ear, taking a chunk out of it and spitting it on the ground. And at which time the referee did end the contest and disqualified Tyson. In MotoGP, we saw Mike Doohan secure his fourth world title. Of the 15 races, he actually won 12 of them. He was placed second twice and retired just once. In the lower class, we saw Max Biaggi win the 250 class. And the class below that, we saw Valentino Rossi winning his first ever world title. Oh, the Australians won the Ashes. In 1997, in Black Rock Desert, Nevada, USA, Commander Alan Green of the Royal Air Force was attempting to break the world speed record, which stood at 633 miles an hour. The car he was trying to doing it in was designed by Ron Ayers, who was an ex-supersonic missile designer, and it was his revolutionary design with two wheels at the front, with one steering wheel from behind, called Thrust SSC. And the car weighed 10 tons and was 16 meters long, and it was powered by two ex-jet fighter engines from a Phantom jet fighter. The engines produced 11,000 horsepower and got through 18 litres of fuel every second. But on the 18th of October 1997, Thrust SSC broke the world speed record, setting a new mark at 763 miles an hour, and also breaking the sound barrier, a record that still holds today.